This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
I'm Margaret Flinter.
Margaret, Happy New Year, and a Happy New Year to all of our listeners at Conversations on Healthcare. Certainly, as the new year begins, we look forward to that sort of continued evolution of healthcare reform. It's a new Congress and many new governors still are managing very fragile economies to take over the helm of their respective states and of Congress. And there are lots of provisions of the healthcare reform bill that are moving forward on implementation. And we still hear talk of efforts to repeal healthcare reform, but I'm not so sure that message will resonate with the public right now.
I think you're right. And I know that certainly the desire is there for repeal, and I think there'll have to be discussion of it. But the practical reality is that it's just not in the cards, given the nature of the Senate and who's president. So we'll see the GOP strategy on communicating with the public about this. But I think the most interesting work will be on the path forward, not on repeal. And all of a sudden, 2014 and the promise of health exchange and subsidies for individuals for health insurance just doesn't seem so far away.
No, it's right around the corner, and yet still right around the corner. House Republicans have indicated that they will next week put forward a bill to repeal health care reform, and they clearly have the votes to do that in the House. But as you said, it will find a difficult path through the Senate. And of course, President Obama has the final say and will veto any effort to repeal. So I think you're right. We have to focus on things that work and ways that we can improve upon the bill. And I think everyone said there are things that they'd like to help modify and improve and make it a better bill.
Sure. And one of our goals this year on Conversations, one of our New Year's resolutions, will be to bring a variety of perspectives to our listeners. Let's hear from policymakers and innovators, from clinicians, and from both sides of the political aisle. Get the best thinking out there on reform and innovation. Everybody has something to contribute to this one.
Let's turn to today's guest, charged with reporting on the strategy for improving quality in healthcare and making recommendations on ways to improve healthcare service delivery, patient health outcomes, and population health. AHRQ stands for the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality and has been working for decades on improving quality and effectiveness. We're happy to have Dr. Carolyn Clancy, who heads up AHRQ and is with us today to talk more about AHRQ's mission and work.
And no matter what the story, you can hear all of our shows on our website, chcradio.com. Subscribe to iTunes to get our show regularly downloaded, or if you'd like to hang on to our every word and read a transcript of one of our shows, come visit us at chcradio.com. And don't forget, you can become a fan of Conversations on Healthcare on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
And as always, if you have feedback, email us at chcradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. Before we speak with Carolyn Clancy, let's check in with our producer, Lauren Bonner, with headline news.
I'm Lauren Bonner with this week's headline news. Republicans have taken over as the new House majority in Congress, and repealing the health care law is their top priority. Although a repeal is far from certain with Democrats controlling the Senate and President Obama having final say, incoming chairman of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, Congressman Fred Upton from Michigan, speaking on Fox News, says he's not concerned about the president's ability to veto a change to the health care bill.
I don't think we're going to be that far off from having the votes to actually override a veto.
But with no guarantee of a repeal, Upton says Republicans have a plan B: dismantling health care reform piece by piece, starting with the individual mandate requiring all Americans to carry insurance and a 1099 provision that was designed to fund the new health care law. House Republicans have set January 12th as their day to vote on a repeal of the health care overhaul. The Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology has issued a final rule to establish the Permanent Certification Program for Health Information Technology. The new rule will establish more transparency and efficiency for certification of electronic health records to healthcare providers. The Recovery Act set aside funds for doctors and hospitals who wanted to adopt EHR technology quickly. And in order to receive the payment, healthcare professionals had to meet the meaningful use standards, measures for providers to show that they are using electronic health records to improve healthcare outcomes in several different categories. This summer, ONC issued the rules governing how to qualify for financial incentives under Medicare and Medicaid for meaningful use of electronic health records. This final rule completes ONC's phased-in approach to certification. This week on Conversations on Healthcare, we're discussing how the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, or ARC, is working to improve America's health through better quality healthcare, safety, and efficiency. In addition to pertinent information and research findings for clinicians and providers, policymakers and payers, ARC is also a resource for consumers and patients to be better informed and more engaged with their healthcare. To cite just one example, ARC has been urging Americans to play a more active role in their healthcare through a series of public service announcements. Here's one of the PSAs that encourages patients to ask questions at the doctor's office. It highlights how most of us are actually good at it, in this case, when ordering at a restaurant.
So, do you have any questions?
What is your soup of the day?
We have a mulligatawny soup.
Oh, do you have any specials?
We have a steak special today.
Oh, how's that cooked?
That's pan-seared and then...
Does it come with a side dish?
Is it grilled?
Can I have it steamed?
So, what do you recommend?
What kind of pie do you have?
You're an actor.
Aren't you from Ohio?
But not so much when it comes to speaking up at the doctor's office.
Any questions?
Ask questions. For the 10 questions everyone should know, go to ahrq.gov.
And those 10 questions everyone should ask their provider are: what is this test for? How many times have you done this procedure? When will I get the results? Why do I need this treatment? Are there any alternatives? What are the possible complications? Which hospital is best for my needs? How do you spell the name of that drug? Are there any side effects, and will this medicine interact with medicines that I'm already taking? We'd be remiss if we didn't point listeners to ahrq.gov, where this information and much more is easily accessible. There's even a tool on ARC's website that helps people build questions for their individual medical situations. Let's turn now to our interview with the director of ARC, Dr. Carolyn Clancy, to learn more.
This is Conversations in Healthcare. Today we're speaking with Dr. Carolyn Clancy, Director of the Department of Health and Human Services Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, whose mission is to improve quality, safety, efficiency, and effectiveness of healthcare for all Americans. Welcome, Dr. Clancy.
Thank you.
You know, you've devoted the past 20 years of your career to advancing healthcare quality and research through your work at the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, where you served as director since 2008. In your earlier career as a primary care internist, you developed a keen interest in medical decision-making. AHRQ, or ARC, is well-known and respected within the healthcare circles, but probably less known to our listeners at Conversation, the general public. Can you share with our listeners a bit about the mission of ARC and its role it plays in American healthcare? And what are your key priorities as we enter the first full year of health reform implementation?
Sure. That's a big question, but one I'm very excited to tell you about. It was created with strong bipartisan support in late 1989 in response to the growing evidence about variations in practice. So, for example, early work had found that if you lived in one county in Vermont or other parts of northern New England, you were more likely to reach age 50 with an intact uterus than if you lived in the county next door. But at the time, no one had actually looked at this kind of phenomenon. And in general, the researchers felt that one key component of the reason for these variations related to clinical uncertainty. It wasn't clear what the right thing to do mm-hmm. was because we didn't have a good science base. So what members of Congress could hear were potential sources of cost without benefit. In other words, if we are investing more in healthcare for some people and they're not better off, then what's wrong with this picture? So that was how the agency was born.
And Dr. Clancy, ARC is one of many arms of the Department of Health and Human Services and one of many federal agencies that's devoted to improving some aspect or many aspects of healthcare. I would think you have to collaborate closely with a number of leaders, from NIH to SAMHSA to the Center for Medicare and Medicaid to the health professions divisions, in order to accomplish your goal. Can you tell us a little bit about these collaborations? How do you work across the whole federal enterprise to advance your mission and your work?
We do work very closely with Medicare and Medicaid, since they pay for a lot of health care. We work very closely with SAMHSA, particularly because we know that behavioral health conditions can complicate almost any kind of ongoing medical care. There's a big focus now on integrating behavioral and regular medical care, particularly in the primary care setting. We work with NIH on developing better science, and the list goes on and on. So it means that partner and collaborator is ARC's middle name, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And one very, very interesting part of the Affordable Care Act is it actually directs the Secretary of Health and Human Services to develop a national strategy for quality. You know, there's been a lot of activity in improving quality and safety in the past, say, 20 years. You know, you can see report cards on health plans. You can look at how hospitals are doing and so on and so forth. But we haven't exactly had a strategy, and now we will. And we have to be very concrete and explicit about how all of these various roles fit together to create a whole greater than the sum of its parts.
You know, Dr. Clancy, I want to talk a little bit about quality and safety. Before healthcare reform passed, Congress took an important step and invested through the federal stimulus bill to support comparative effectiveness research, which is the study of what treatment works best when you compare one or more ways of treating the same condition. Could you explain how comparative effectiveness aims to not only solve many of the day-to-day practice problems, but also target the amount of waste in our healthcare system?
Comparative effectiveness, or what we're now calling patient-centered outcomes research, is a way to actually more precisely apply what we know from biomedical science. If we know which patients are likely to benefit the most from, say, a new kind of treatment, whether that's surgery, a medication, a kind of innovative new device, and so forth, and which will do actually as well and maybe even better with more traditional modes of treatment, then one thing that we can actually do is reduce the amount of guesswork that goes into it, you know, where you're trying 8 or 10 treatments before you find the one that works for you. So, you know, the good news is in 2010, going into 2011, it's a great time to be alive because there's so many options for diagnosis, for treatment, and it's no surprise that the U.S. leads the world in biomedical innovation, and we don't want to stop that for a minute. But knowing how to apply it more precisely, that's what patient-centered outcomes research is all about.
Well, I think it's a great time to be alive ought to become the mantra under the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. That's terrific. And kind of along those lines, I've read that ARC has recently teamed up with the Ad Council to get people to play a more active role in their own healthcare through a series of public service advertisements. Tell us a little bit about your goal in doing this, and how are you going to know if you've been successful? What are your kind of metrics for success there?
You know, 50, 60 years ago, many people didn't live long enough to have chronic illnesses. You know, they would drop dead in the prime of life from a heart attack and so forth. And now we've got much better treatments, but we still don't do the best job. We don't do as good as we know in improving care for people with chronic illnesses. And part of that equation has to involve informed, activated patients, because after all, who's living with the illness and trying to do the best to manage it so that they don't actually have to think about health care all the time? Now, I hope you'll notice that it rolled right off my tongue to talk about informed, activated patients. In fact, a study in the mid-90s found that people ask very few questions in healthcare. In fact, one study that involved very detailed observations found that on average, people ask 1.4 questions from the time they arrive in a doctor's office to the time they leave. And that included questions about parking. Now, you can't be a partner in this enterprise if you're not engaging and asking questions. And we learned over time that this is kind of scary for people. So we began working with the Ad Council several years ago, trying to point out that this is not only important, but it's actually kind of fun. Because when we asked people do you think about questions that you should be asking when you go to the doctor? Everybody said yes. If you say, well, do you write them down? There's a long pause. No, not exactly. People more or less imagine that when they get there, it will all come flooding back. And in fact, healthcare can be kind of chaotic. So we've actually got on our website what we call a question builder for the kinds of things you can be thinking about so that you literally walk in there with a list of questions because you're far more likely to remember it. So the ads range from doctors and nurses and other health professionals singing and dancing about questions or the answer to slightly edgier ads. And one of my favorites is an ad where a real estate agent is wishing a family good luck with their new house and so forth. And she said, I know that you'll have many happy years here. And then she looks at the husband, who's a middle-aged man, and says, except for you, because you're going to be dead in 2 years because you failed to go to the doctor and find out about not getting the, you know, preventable disease that kills your phone. Well, that got people's attention, all right.
That got
my attention.
So, you know, right now we are monitoring how many people visit the website, how often do they download this question builder, and so forth, and are now looking into other ways to evaluate this.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today we're speaking with Dr. Carolyn Clancy, Director of the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. Dr. Clancy, along with ARC's effort to engage the public and increase performance measures, you've been helping communities develop ways to create incentives for quality and better preventative services. It's sometimes a stretch, I think, for the public to imagine the federal agency to have a local impact, particularly in healthcare. Can you discuss your strategy on creating change at the local level?
Let me just say, I think at the end of the day, I'm from Massachusetts, so I can always quote Tip O'Neill, is my view. All healthcare, like all politics, is local. So starting several years ago, we actually put out an announcement for communities who wanted to work with us to improve care where they are. We don't have that kind of reach, but we do have a lot of very important and helpful tools and methods and so forth that they can use, but the engagement is what they have to do. So we support a learning network so that these communities can learn from each other.
Dr. Clancy, we run a statewide community health center that's committed first and foremost to clinical excellence, but it's also committed to increasing knowledge about primary care through research and development. And we look at the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality as an organization that supports research at the practice level, not just through the academic organizations, which are very important, of course, but also directly through practice-based research. And that seems to me one of the unique attributes of your organization. Is this commitment something that grew out of your own earlier work in practice and in academia? And might you share with our listeners a few examples of what you think of as transformative research at the practice level?
ARC is a research agency, so we don't pay for care, we don't provide it, and we don't regulate it. So that means we don't have a direct reach into healthcare. So in the past, I'd say 8 to 10 years, we've been funding more and more initiatives so that we've got partners who are actually providing that direct reach into healthcare. One of the most exciting, since you mentioned primary care, is a group of practice-based research networks. You know, about three-quarters of outpatient visits in this country are to practices with fewer than five clinicians. Now, in those practices, and by the way, a lot of people like small practices, right? People tend to know who they are and so forth. I can understand that. But there isn't what you would call infrastructure. There's no one walking around who's got a badge on their coat that says, I'm the quality person, right? It's much more like a small mom-and-pop operation. Everybody does everything. So we created these networks inspired by others and provide a lot of support for their ongoing work because of two reasons. One was it was very important to identify the pressing issues facing clinicians and patients in the trenches day-to-day. You can't know that from a distance. And secondly, it was a way for clinicians to be working with colleagues potentially in their region or state, but also literally across the country on common challenges. And, you know, that sense of being part of something larger then this immediate practice has been very, very important to the clinicians who participate. So I can't even tell you, every year we convene many of the leading networks, and it's kind of like Woodstock, you know. People are very, very excited and enthusiastic about their work. And, you know, at the end of the day, this is all about figuring out, how do you make the right thing the easy thing to do? Mm-hmm. And you can't know that unless you live in the practice setting or are working closely with those who do.
Dr. Clancy, when you look around the world, what do you see in terms of innovations, and who should our listeners at Conversations be keeping an eye on?
One of the biggest issues that I see confronting our healthcare system today is that oftentimes the best practices in improving safety and quality don't get taken up by others. So we've got a growing list of really fantastic successes that are a product of the research that we've funded, and yet they are more or less the equivalent of one-hit wonders. Do we think that there's any kind of innovation that gets us to a place where, you know, successes are disseminated much more rapidly is something that's urgently needed? We actually have a specific site on our website called the Innovations Exchange. Mm-hmm. So that innovators can learn from each other, both about what worked and, frankly, about what doesn't. The CMS is going to be sponsoring a new innovation center, which was just announced a few weeks ago. So I think we'll be hearing a whole lot more about that. But we desperately need to figure out, how do we do a better job?
Today we've been speaking with Dr. Carolyn Clancy, director of HHS's Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. Dr. Clancy, thank you so much for joining us on Conversations today.
Thank you.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives.
This week's bright idea focuses on the Food Corps, a new branch of AmeriCorps that's taken on the nation's obesity crisis in schools across the country. Food Corps is a project of the National Farm to School Network, a joint program of the Center for Food Injustice and the Community Food Security Coalition. Last year, with the help of an AmeriCorps National Planning Grant, the network began a 16-month planning process for Food Corps for this newest addition to AmeriCorps' wide variety of national service positions. Like the traditional AmeriCorps recruits, who are typically young adults, individuals will sign on for a year of service through Food Corps working specifically in a school food system. They'll develop farm-to-school supply chains, expand food system and nutrition education programs, and build and tend school gardens. In the face of rising national obesity rates, they will strive to make healthy, organic, and locally grown food available to America's school children, while at the same time giving them the skills to provide food for themselves and to make healthy nutrition choices on their own. At a time when almost 1 in 5 school-aged children is obese, the CDC has identified the farm-to-school programs as a beneficial part of community-based obesity solutions. The National Farm-to-School Network has based Food Corps' approach on several model programs around the country, including the Youth Grow program in the Portland, Oregon area. Over the past 10 years, that program has helped 7 schools create school garden programs which supply their cafeterias and provide educational resources for garden clubs for low-income students. Many schools have begun similar initiatives, but most lack the resources to fully implement these programs. By placing the federally supported fellows in these schools, Food Corps will fill that void. Food Corps is just one of many organizations taking aim at the obesity epidemic, but the National Farm to School Network believes that its approach of both making healthy food available to school children and teaching them how to select and grow nutritious food is essential to equipping the next generation with the skills and resources to reverse the skyrocketing obesity rates. Now that's a bright idea. This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.